The Extra Life video game marathon is coming on October 20th. Extra Life is just like a run or a walk or a bike event, except you never have to get off the couch. Sign up at extra-life.org. Then get friends and family members to give you money to play. On October 20th at 8 a.m., play any games you want on any system for 24 hours. Find out more and sign up. extra-life.org. Play games. Heal kids. Extra Life. This message made possible by Children's Miracle Network Hospitals and this podcast.
You are listening to Rift Overcast.
Hello, welcome to Rift Overcast. My name is Matt, and with me as always is Joe.
Hey.
Also joining us again this week is Kel. How's it going, buddy?
Hey, what's up, guys?
I hope you all have been enjoying the 90-minute episodes that we've had recently, because it looks like you're in for another one. News has really picked up for Rift this week. The new Mage Soul has been revealed, the Harbinger. We'll go in depth on this new soul and show you some of its abilities later on. Also, you're killing me, Kel. You're killing me with this stuff. Tell me the stage isn't up when it is up, in the middle of my announcements. It's right there. You just got to use your eyes.
That's why I didn't say it on TeamSpeak.
We'll go into in-depth on the new Mage Soul later on. Also, you can kiss goodbye factions on PvE shards and very possibly gear grinding in PvP. You could also kiss that goodbye. Maybe. We'll say maybe. All that and more on this week's Overcast, but first let's go over the announcements. Did not do a poll this week, but we do have a poll prepared for next week. Next week, starting right after we end this episode, I'm going to put the poll up on the site. For next week's poll, it's going to be, how do you feel about the removing of the gear grind from PvP in Rift? Because that is definitely an extremely hot topic on the forums right now. We really want to hear what everybody else has to say about that. Also, Rift is doing a very special deal for Storm Legion. You can buy 1 year of Rift, plus the Storm Legion expansion, plus the butt cheek mount for $119.99. And the butt cheek mount, by the way, of course, I'm talking about Landslide.
I love looking at butt cheeks.
We have always known that, Joe.
I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah. Well, Kel, you should bring up your suggestion of a testicle hanging behind him.
Jesus! Can we be maybe a little bit decent about this? Just a little bit. Like, I understand that you know, Landslide's got a very, what's the word, defined backside to him right now.
Wait, let's backcheck. When have we ever been decent? Just saying.
So, if you buy this 1 year for $119.99, you get 12 months of Rift game time, plus Storm Legion, plus Landslide. If Storm Legion costs a full retail price of $60, which it probably won't, but if it did, you're looking at this deal basically resulting in an average of $5 per month for 12 months for you. If the expansion costs $30 retail, you subtract the value of $30 from $119.99, results in about $7.50 a month for 12 months. So really, no matter how you look at this deal, this is a total steal. I regret that I don't have a lump sum of $120 to just drop on this today, because I would.
Well, apparently that's a common opinion, since standing in Meridian, I see a good 20 of these running around consistently. The mounts, that is.
I know, there are. They're everywhere. There's a ton of landslides. A lot of people have really picked up on this deal and have gone right for it. Oh, and one more thing with this deal, too. A lot of people, whenever any promotions come out, people get kind of nervous. Joe, you and I were talking off air about this a little bit. We were a little nervous that we might miss our opportunity to do this. But I believe it was Elrar, I think, came out and actually said that this deal is actually going to be available right up until, like, the day before Storm Legion's launch. So,
oh, that's good. Don't have to rush for it.
There is one little issue with this deal, though, is what happens for the players that have already purchased a year in advance or have 2 years in advance, because there was an old promotion that you could do $99 annually for 12 months of Rift.
Well, a couple people have brought up that issue. It's actually a thread in the forums, and I mean, the only real suggestion was ever given was they could, and it wasn't even by any developer or any community manager, just someone suggested they should call up support. You know, we don't know how that's going to go. I would hope that Triumph would, I mean, if someone is basically going to be like, refund my year and I'll rebuy it just to get this, especially since it's $20 more, because the other one was $99, I would hope they would do that, because that would make sense, especially for Triumph. I mean, they're not losing any money, but...
Yeah, I don't think they've actually said specifically for sure what's going to happen, but I think the prevailing opinion is that after your 1 year of game time, you know, it's basically like a game card, runs up, then you continue with whatever you had before. So you get the $99 if you had the $99 before, at least, you know, but they've never confirmed that.
Well, I know Elroy did make a post, and it had me a little bit confused earlier while we were talking about this off air, that he said, if you have a $99 plan right now, the annual plan right now, the old promotional plan for 1 year of Rift, and you purchase the $119.99 1 year, 12 months of for the Storm Legion deal, what basically is going to happen is you won't be charged your $99 annual fee until, you know, whatever, 18 months or whatever it is later on. So it's just this additional time is going to just get tacked on to the year that you have, basically. And then you, as long as you don't cancel your subscription, the next time that you would be charged your annual rate, you will get the promotional costs or the promotional price that you had before. But there are some people that have, like, 2 years ahead of time. I mean... I understand buying a year in advance for an MMO, but as much as we love Rift, I wouldn't go like 3, 4, 5 years into the future for subscriptions for this. So, I mean, Tryon's got to obviously do something, like maybe prorate the time or something.
I don't expect something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like confirmation to me, but I didn't see that post. But, you know, there's one guy in the forum who had like 560-some days of game time already. I was like, huh, what in the world? I mean, that's a lot of game time to put out.
Yeah, the guy I was talking about was 3 years in because he had 900-some days left.
Yeah, that was the post that I was thinking of. I mean, there could be a very few amount of those kind of incidents where some of these players just have like an obscene amount of time already paid up and waiting for them to use or whatever. But I wouldn't do that. So I personally think I'm kind of like, you know, I understand you want to support the game, you really like the game, but that's kind of your fault. I mean, really, I mean, paying like 3, 4, 5 years in advance for a game that... It's getting a little bit ridiculous, you know, at that point. But
well, I think a lot of people did that when they announced the new veteran rewards and you got that mount. You know, what was that called? Months
yeah,
back.
That's true.
That's probably like that was the main motivation behind it. And then they didn't know that 2 months later you're going to be able to buy that disgusting mount for $15. I mean, sorry, it's only mildly disgusting.
Think about like how much money these people have spent just to like unlock their veteran rewards right now, though. Doesn't that seem a little ridiculous to you?
No, because we came from World of Warcraft where you had to pay for every single item you ever fucking made or did or had, so, and people bought obscene amounts of those by way more than, so to see like the first paid thing like that introduced to Rift and a lot of people buy it is absolutely no surprise.
Yeah, good point. I mean, I probably spent a decent amount of money on stuff in World of Warcraft. Not as much as some people, but, I mean, I still bought a couple things. Like, I bought the little Ragnaros pet, but, yeah. I mean, I definitely, it doesn't really surprise me, because some people, they get attached to an MMO, and that they kind of think of that as their MMO for life. And I think if they offered lifetime subscriptions, there would be some people who bought lifetime subs.
I remember telling Matt, like, a while back, like, right when I was quitting WoW last year, I actually went to my account, you know, page, and I was amazed how many times I had purchased faction change and server transfer simultaneously, which combined are $50, which is absurd. Because 30 for faction change, 25 for, or 55 rather, I should say. 25 for server transfer. And I did that literally to like a single character, because, you know, my friends were on the Switch servers and faction change simultaneously, which happened like 2 or 3 different times. I would do that to like 1 or 2 characters at a time. So I literally spent like $300 on faction changes and server transfers.
This is completely absurd. But it goes to show you, right? If you have 200,000 players drop $300 on transfers and mounts and all these microtransactions each, holy crap, that adds up fast, right? So that,
oh, yeah.
That makes you wonder, with the popularity of the Landslide mount, do you think that they're going to offer this as a microtransaction in Storm Legion at some point?
I think so. I mean, they did the same thing with the Tiger mount, because there was such high demand for it, but people didn't want to buy, you know, the full thing, so they're like, all right, here's it is for $15. I really think they should do that. I mean, anything that makes Tryon generate more money, therefore put that money back into the game, why would I be against that? As long as it's cosmetic and it's, like, fluff, it's not, like, buy-to-win type mentality.
Well, I think that there's a degree of pride in having collector's items, you know, and that's why people go for a lot of these big promotional deals. That's why people buy a lot of the, you know, the different collector's editions and the different, you know, add-on packs, like, you know, the what was it, the Ancients pack or whatever for Rift and stuff that had the
Ashes of History or something?
Ashes of History, yeah, is what I'm talking about. You know, that's why people buy that stuff and pay for that stuff. It's because these are things that were originally supposed to be like limited time offers, and they're like, well, I don't want to miss out on this mount, and then I want to be able to later on have a mount that nobody can get anymore, and somebody's going to be like, hey, where'd you get that Landslide mount? And I'm going to be like, well, I bought the 1 year of Rift prior to Storm Legion's launch. They'll be like, oh, can you get that anymore? And it's like, no, you can't get it anymore. I'm like one of like 20 people that have it or something. You know what I mean?
No, I would feel bad if I bought this. I mean, the same thing happened with the Tiger mount, though. And the guy who actually talked about what I was referencing earlier about being so far ahead, he actually said he got mad when they offered the Tiger mount because he thought he was one of very few to have that. And, you know, just a couple months later, they wound up being like, hey, you can buy it for $15. I was more like, generally speaking, you know, if they made mounts that were specifically $15 and they were separate from the ones you bought for these collector's edition, I'd be for it. I'm still not totally against this because even if it was exclusive to this and they never made this Landslide $15, I mean, we were just talking about how many people have it already. It's really not going to be that exclusive. I don't think saying, hey, I'm one of 2,000 is very exclusive.
2,000 out of 250,000 or more because yeah, they're expecting numbers to go up.
I don't know. I mean, at your server, any given time in the city, when you see a good like 100 people around and there's 10 with it, that's really not that exclusive.
I'm cool with them doing reskins, like of, you know, existing mounts and stuff for, you know, for sale on like the shop and stuff. I mean, because, you know, some of these, like basically the Tendril is a reskin of the Spindrel mount. I don't want them to not do mounts for world events because I think that's one of the cool things that Rift does. You know, they give us basically free mounts when they do world events. And so I don't want them to stop doing that. So it just kind of depends on how they do it, but I'm all for anything that generates you know, more money. I didn't get the Tiger mount just because I didn't think it was worth what they were charging for it. But the Ashes of History one I bought, you know, because you got a couple things with it, and it was only like $10. So I mean, that was a great deal, I thought.
Well, the Tiger's not worth anything because it looks terrible. I mean, it's a cool idea, but when it's stiff as it looks, when someone's on it, it looks like an action figure.
It does kind of look like an action figure. I don't know. I think it's the legs. Its legs are just a little bit too straight for me, and it kind of, the way it runs, kind of looks like somebody's, like, holding it with, like, two fingers and, like, making it run, like, pretending that it's running or something. But, yeah, no, I like what you said, Kel, about the reskinning, because I think that's something that I would like to see is, I mean, if you're going to front load $120, right, for a year of Rift, you want the Landslide. I think a lot of people are doing it for Landslide, to be honest. Then, sure, give us a Landslide for, like, $15, like, later on, but make it, like, blue or something. You know what I mean? Like, make it, like, a different color just so it sets it apart from the one that you dropped $120
for.
Or
put, like, armor on the one that's on now and then take the armor off for the other one.
Or give him, like, pants so that you don't see his butt cheeks.
And then people pay $15 have to look at his butt cheeks. It's like a penalty. It's like, you didn't buy the free or the offer, whatever you want to call it, the limited time offer, so you have to look at his ass all day.
I am proud to have a bare-assed Landslide mount, yes.
Just give him some ass armor, you know, cover it up.
Well, on the Aura of Mathos, he has armor on his legs that go up, like, to the very, like, bottom of his ass. They could just extend that. They pretty much, like me and Matt said, the Landslide, as much as I think it's a cool mount, they pretty much, like, copy and paste the Aura of Mathos and put a new head on it. That's all they really did.
Yeah, it is. It's basically the same model, with a little bit of extra doodads and stuff added onto it. It animates the same way and everything, but I mean, that's okay. I'm okay with that. It looks different enough. So let's move on. I want to do the 1.10 stuff first, kind of save the better stuff for last, because, Kel, you were on the PTS recently trying out the Scarward Reach stuff, and we all enjoyed watching you get your butt kicked by Prince House and stuff, but tell us a little bit about what you found on the PTS for 1.10.
Well, there's not a lot of stuff on there right now. The biggest thing, the reason why I did the little stream was just basically to check out the new Instant Adventures and stuff. And I probably ran about four or five different Instant Adventures, enough to get, you know, the like a boss to pop, and it happened to be Prince Hylas.
Yeah.
But they were really good. I mean, I found no bugs in any of the ones that I did, although they also kind of seemed to be based around quest hubs. It kind of followed along, or it could be following along, your questing path, so you could actually do regular questing. And then, Prince Hylas, and he's pretty badass. He's not a pushover like he is in Silverwood. Basically, it follows along the questing path. So you kind of, you know, you're in good shape, you know, if you're questing alongside of doing instant adventures. And Hylas, like I said, he's got some of the same mechanics that he has in the raid version of GSB. He's actually, I think, harder than he is in the Chronicle. It's pretty cool. He does, you know, Soul Fracture and stuff, and it'll kick your ass. He's pretty tough.
Yeah, that was what we saw you getting your butt kicked, because you seemed to be doing relatively good. You were dodging the plants and stuff that he was pulling out there and everything like that, and you seemed to be doing relatively decent. I don't know if you would have gotten the kill or not, but then he did the Soul Fracture, and we watched you kind of run away and around a corner, and you just kind of died to some pretty heavy dot ticks there. It was pretty brutal.
Yeah, it's. I was kind of surprised, but I actually have no problem with that. And I'm actually glad that they're making some of these IA bosses, you know, where they require a little bit of effort and a little bit of coordination. And I think he's probably the zone. There's always like one boss in each IA chain that's like the zone boss, like harder than all the other bosses that are in the IAs. And I think Hylas is probably the one for that area because, you know, most of like the major zone events in Scarwood are life ones, and they actually involve Prince Hylas. So
yeah, I'm really looking forward to Scarwood. I'm actually helping a friend level a new character right now, and I'm going to be leveling a new character of my own very soon here. And while doing so, I noticed going through all the Free March instant adventures and the Stonefield instant adventures that a lot of the instant adventure objectives were actually the same objectives as several of the standard quests. And so I found it to be very beneficial to go and pick up all of the quests available at one particular quest hub, jump into an instant adventure, do the IAs until I get those quests done, and kind of let the IA group help me do the standards. Then I would drop, go turn those in, get the next set, and go back to IA. So it was actually kind of worked out kind of interesting to go back and forth and stuff, and I'm really, really looking forward to being able to do that in Scarwood, because as it stands right now, after Stonefield, this character is level 32 now, so it's not as fun and it's not as beneficial for me to go back because I can't pick up those standard quests anymore.
Do we know the entirety of all the zones they're adding in 1.10?
They're supposed to have everything. I think 1.10 is supposed to have at least Scarlet Gorge and Scarwood Reach. Scarwood Reach is the only one that I guess we have actually confirmed right now, because it's the only one that's actually on the PTS. But prior to Storm Legion, every single zone is supposed to have IA, so they'll get there at some point.
Yeah, originally on the PTS, when they first started doing all these IAs, last patch, they had loaded all of them into the IA UI, and you could actually queue for all of them except for IPP was the only one that no one could find. But so Moonshade and Scarlet Gorge, definitely. I don't know if those will make it in. That's the only question.
Yeah, I think Scarlet Gorge, Scarwood, and Moonshade are all going to get it. I think Droughtlands and IPP will have to be a hot patch or a 1.11 or something in between just to get that in there before Storm Legion, or maybe it'll come with 2.0, because I think. And this is a little bit off topic, but I think that Storm Legion, obviously it's going to be 2.0. I think we're going to receive patch 2.0 prior to Storm Legion's release. I think 1.10 is the last patch before 2.0, but 2.0 is going to be like, I don't know, 3 weeks before Storm Legion actually releases. And 2.0 is going to have like...
That's a good assumption.
Any instant adventures that they don't have in yet, you know, the changes to the soul system, changes to PvP factions, and anything else that we're going to talk about, all of it in this episode, I think that's all going to be there, except for, like, the new souls prop might not be there yet, the new zones aren't going to be there yet, you know, that kind of stuff. Anything that involves changing the classic game will come 3 or 4 weeks prior to Storm Legion in 2.0, so we will eventually get all of the instant adventures. So, also coming with 1.10, this was just recently announced, just a couple days ago, or was it just yesterday even?
It's yesterday.
Faction as Fiction is the thread title, originally posted by Elrar, and basically, once 1.10 hits, if you're on a PvP shard, there will be no more factions. You cannot go to the enemy faction city, so a Defiant cannot enter Sanctum, and a Guardian cannot enter Meridian, because the faction leaders are essentially still at war. However, the lore excuse here is basically that we as Ascended, with the way the war against the Bloodstorm has evolved, it is now up to us to basically choose our own beliefs, you know what I mean? We have more freedom to kind of go between, so there's been this blurring of the line that separates the factions, and you're going to be able to be in the same guild as Q, queue with for dungeons, PvP, chat with, trade with. There's literally like no limitations between factions anymore.
Yeah, and Matt had said you're not going to be able to go into Sanctum as a Defiant and vice versa, but there will be a new city in Storm Legion Port Tempest that will be a neutral city. So I don't... Unless they just don't... They follow the World of Warcraft route, which I sure hope they don't, and they like don't put an auction house or something in Port Tempest, so therefore you're forced to go back to the original cities, there probably won't be any issue with not being able to enter those as the opposite faction.
Yeah, and I was able to do some instant adventures in Stonefield yesterday, so you can do cross-factioning with the Defiant or Guardian specific zones now, which is nice.
Yeah, and I talked off air, but I'll mention on the podcast as well that Elrar had said that, because someone brought up that, like DSM, for example, when you run it as Defiant is different than it is as Guardian, so he said that the leader of the group will dictate how the dungeon goes. My only real thing I want them to answer is how, and someone actually brought it up on the initial thread, because there's been like so many pages of responses ever since they posted it. I want to know how travel hubs are going to go, because if like you can use all particulums, that'd be so awesome.
That's a good point, but I mean, if you can't go to the enemy faction city because the faction leaders are still at war, I'm assuming that any Defiant, you know, that Guardian is not going to be able to go to a Defiant quest hub, you know, anywhere with like a red particulum, you know what I mean, such as like on like the Amber Isle or whatever, you're not going to be able to go to those, because those are going to have guards there that are placed there by the faction leaders, right? So it stands to reason that you're not going to be able to quest at those areas.
I honestly don't know. That's something worth checking into. I'll check on the PTS next time I'm there.
But I mean, this is, I mean, what do you guys think about this? Like the blurring of the factions? I mean, two factions has always been kind of like at least two factions has always been a core part of games in the genre. But we've got, you know, Guild Wars 2 coming out. That's got, I think, three factions who are essentially all allied, except for their whole dub v dub v dub, you know, mode or whatever that they do. And so maybe MMOs are getting, I don't know, getting away from this a little bit. Is this a good thing? Because I like it. But I want to hear what you guys think.
Well, I told you, like, God, that'd be a good 10 episodes ago that I thought factions are stupid. Numerous people said on the thread that there's really no negative to this because there's so much to gain. Like, there's more people to group with. There's more people to do recruit for guilds. Therefore, raiding is more accessible and easier. You know, recruitment is going to be, like, dramatically easier. And you won't have to complain so much about servers being low pop because now you're essentially doubling your population, even on low shards. So Kel can stay on Gnarlwood and not feel guilty about that crappy shard.
I'm on Wolfsbane now, by the way. But yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. Because the biggest problem that you have with, like, you know, faction systems is it limits, oftentimes it limits, you know, at least some part of the game, if not, you know, a large portion of the game. I mean, Dark Age of Camelot, one of the things that always bugged me was the fact that, you know, if you were, like, in Albion, that was all you could do. You could never go to the other three realms, or the other two realms. But then they opened a co-op server where all three realms you could go throughout, you know, and, you know, explore everywhere. And I mean, I thought that was awesome, and a lot of people really liked that idea. And, you know, now the Rift's kind of going away from that, I think it's a good thing. I think you'll see more games do that too.
Yeah, I always tell Matt that the only game that I played prior to, well, Rift now, that did this was S3G, but S3G was a completely different game. It was a sandbox, had a, you know, completely different mindset behind it. So as much as I wanted it to happen to this game, I didn't think it was going to happen, not even because I thought it was a bad idea. I thought it was a great idea, but I actually thought it was going to get a negative reaction. But they've actually gotten such an overwhelming positive reaction that I'm almost surprised.
Yeah, the only thing that has me, like, because I think this is awesome, mostly because I'm going to be able to play my Bami and my Dwarf, like, side by side. Like, I don't ever need to make any other race ever again. I can beat Bami and Dwarf for the rest of my time playing Rift. Plus, I can play a Dwarf Mage, and you can play your Bami Warrior Joe, which is going to be awesome.
Exactly. Though you're not going to level that mage, but yeah.
I might. I don't know. I'm pretty. He's already level 29, so I might as well maybe just finish him and have him there as an option for Storm Legion, anyways. But what I was going to say was my concern is what's going. This is only happening on PvE shards, right? So what is going to happen to PvP shards?
They said PvP shards. The only thing you'll be able to do is like Dungeon Finder, basically. I don't think you'll be able to be in the same guild. Did they say that? I think they said if you're also flagged, you can't really do anything even on a PvE shard. That is. You can't really do anything of the opposite faction, I believe.
Instance content only, no open world stuff. So no instant adventures, nothing like open world on the PvP servers, but you can do like raiding and dungeon. Actually, I don't know about... Yeah, I think you can do raiding too. Because you can join a dungeon group and then just go into, you know, make it into a raid and then go into a raid from there. So I think you can do raiding too. But that's it.
Well, I was going to say two small little tidbits about this. Number one, I don't know, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, me and Matt had discussed that they changed the guild recruitment thread on the forums. It used to be like Shard Travel Hub, and then it was like just called guild recruitment, and it wasn't separated by faction. And I didn't even take that as an inclination as what they were doing. They made people like manually tag like in the name of the thread or the title, you know, we're defining, we're guardian. So that was like foreshadowing we should have picked up on, number one. And number two is they've been so resistant to merge the servers that we've constantly talked about that. And this is probably why they were so hesitant and resistant to do it, because, or reluctant, I should say, because they probably knew that there was no point because they're essentially doubling every server's population now.
That's an excellent point, actually, that I hadn't even thought of. It's true. People have been calling out for server merges, but if you merge the factions together, I mean, you're essentially taking two servers and mushing them together.
Yeah, because now, like, the pool for virtually anything you do, you know, like literally anything, whether it's like raiding, you're just getting people in guilds, doing dungeons, doing master modes, doing daily raid rifts, and go on and on, weeklies, whatever, is the pool is essentially doubled. So they probably figured that was incoming, or at least had an idea it was coming. They might not have fleshed out all the details, but that's probably why they didn't even say anything about server mergers. They didn't even say, like, no, we're not doing it. They just didn't say anything because they knew this was incoming.
This is going to do wonders for guild recruitment as well, for you know, the available pool of raiders to pull from is going to nearly double, and it's also going to offset the fact that some servers are more Defiant heavy and some are more Guardian heavy.
Yeah, and I actually really wonder what this is going to do with instance PvP more than anything, because, you know, right now, like virtually every other game, the bad guys, or in this case the Defiant, always win, you know, the war fronts and whatnot. I wonder how that's going to play out now.
Well, from what I gather, you're still choosing a faction at character creation. Simply that your faction is not limited to grouping only with your faction, you know what I mean? But you still are choosing a side. And so if you're queuing up for a warfront by yourself, then it's just like it is now. You're going to, if you're a Guardian and you queue up by yourself, you're going to be put on the Guardian side team unless you get the Mercenary, join as a Mercenary. Then you'll be, you know, thrown over to the Defiant side. But I think if you are grouped up, say, like, you know, you're on your Bomby Joe on Defiant side, and I'm on my Dwarf on Guardian side, and we you know, get in a group together and we queue up for a Warfront together, it will probably be based on whoever has leader, just like they're doing with the dungeons.
And I wonder if they also, because, I mean, there's been so much negative feedback to the Mercenary system. I wonder if that's another thing where they put it in and, like, soon thereafter or even beforehand knew they were eventually going to do something like this. So they figured, you know, why change it? You know, they haven't even really commented on it since it came out. So they probably knew that something big with the factions, you know, breaking down the walls, essentially, that you know, there was no point to removing it because they were eventually going in this direction, so people wouldn't care.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've seen this coming for a long time.
I'm just happy because, like, the Guild Finder, for example, like I was telling Matt, we were looking for a guild. Right now, what really bothers me is, like, no one posts on the guild recruitment page. Like, there's, like, the same 10 guilds, like, recycled every page. It's retarded. And even the Guild Finder, like, people don't update it, and then if they do update it, it's very seldomly, so, like, the information on it half time is wrong. Sometimes, like, I was with one guild, and, like, they had fallen apart 3 months prior, and their guild thing was still up, so. And some people just flat out don't put anything on the Guild Finder, so. And there's just a lack of pages. Like, if you're looking for a raiding guild.
Yeah.
Like, you'll literally get, even on Greybar, which is one of probably the heaviest raiding environments I've seen, you'll get, like, 9 pages. And I would say, like, of those 9 pages, maybe, like, 2 to 3 pages are, like, viable options for most people. Everyone else is, like, you know, either extremely far behind on progression, or they're casual raiders, they barely raid at all, or there's something else that, you know, that wouldn't appeal to the, you know, very standard raider, especially not the hardcore raider. So I would love to just be able to, like, click search on Guild Finder and see, like, I don't know, 20 pages. That'd be, like, amazing.
So, you know what I thought of, right? Looking at Becca Conquest and the story that falls behind each of the factions in Conquest, the Oathsworn, the Dominion, and the Nightfall. And considering that they've just blurred the line, said that they're going to almost erase the line between factions, right? Their wording was that, you know, the two faction leaders for Guardian Defiant are still, they still have their differences. They're still, you know, basically at war with each other. And that these wounds will take time to heal, which I might be reading into this, but I think that might mean that they will eventually heal at some point. And we could be moving into, maybe I'm getting like another expansion ahead of Tryon on this or something, but we could be moving into an age where Defiant and Guardian go away completely, and Oathsworn, Dominion, and Nightfall, because these are, if I remember right, at least Nightfall is like from the future. These are like futuristic factions that we're joining when we go into Conquest. Maybe we're actually going to be, you know, have Dwarf and Eth and Bami and everything all on the character select screen, but then you choose Oathsworn, Dominion, or Nightfall at some point.
Well, I told you that I was always in favor of having no factions, or that's the OG system where you pick the faction after creation, which I think that would kind of be how Dominion would be, because, you know, it would have only effects, like, for certain areas. It wouldn't affect the majority of the game. It wouldn't be like how, you know, most structured theme park MMOs are, or even Rift is, as it is right now, before they put this patch in. So I don't think that's far off, or not far off, I don't think that's far-fetched, I should say, but I don't know. I think that they're happy with what they're doing, and I think them saying that, you know, that they're eventually might heal, is kind of just like, they don't know exactly what they're going to do with the direction, but that basically gives them like a backup plan just in case they want to do that or they want to go another direction. I've been saying for the longest time that they could always, because, you know, when we originally discussed them breaking down the factions, we were explaining how they're going to do that because the conflict between the two factions is a big part of the lore. And I always said that they could take a very similar thing that WoW did in Wrath, though. They'll do a much better try, and I have a lot more faith in them, is that they're basically, you know, coexisting to kill a common foe or something to that effect. And I think that's the direction they're going to do. So I wouldn't expect them to introduce another three factions, even if they did have limited effect, you know, in terms of, you know, actually playing the game.
It is. It's one of those things that I think you kind of need in an MMORPG for the sake of the lore, and especially those who really enjoy role-playing in these games, is if your factions aren't at conflict, there's not a lot of excitement really going on in the story, right? But, I mean, Rift does kind of have a one-up on that, because really this whole time we've kind of had three factions the whole time, because there's been the Guardians, the Defiant, and the Bloodstorm, right? So that's what I'm thinking is in terms of the lore evolving, I think they will stick with this blurring of the lines between factions. I don't think they're ever going to limit us after 1.10 to not being able to group with an enemy faction or anything again, but I think that they will stick with this ideals, and that we could see some additional story for Oathsworn, Dominion, and Nightfall in the near future, very possibly sometime during Storm Legion. But we did get one thing right. 1.10 is the quality of life patch. Like, that's what they're doing with this patch. They're doing all quality of life stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty much all quality of life stuff that I've seen. I think you're right about the factions. I don't know that we're ever going to see that really completely go away. But the Oathsworn, Dominion, Nightfall, I think we will see more on that, because I think if they do another Conquest, which it sounds like they're looking at doing that was one of the things they mentioned in the developer diary, then I think we'll see more lore for those three, universe factions. So I think they'll develop that further, I think.
Yeah, it wouldn't make much sense to give us factions from the future, and then obviously over time we're eventually going to go up to where these factions originated from. We're going to catch up to that story, to that lore on the timeline. We're going to have to run into them in, like, real time, you know what I mean? At some point where we become the Nightfall that went back in time. It's the whole time travel thing, which I love. You know, at some point, we are going to become the Nightfall that went back in time to when Conquest was first patched in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And then you get into that whole alternate universe thing, and it gets really screwy. But that's part of what I like about Rift's story is, you know, you have the time travel element, you have the, you know, alternate universes, and, you know, I mean, because each one of those factions is from a different alternate reality, so it makes for an interesting story.
It's funny, I've seen a lot of articles popping up about returning players to Rift, and some of the people that said that, you know, they came back and it was really, really good, but they just couldn't get into it because it was a fantasy game still. And it's funny because when you look at the lore, like, hopefully Storm Legion really reflects more of the sci-fi aspects of Rift, because when you look at the lore and the background for the story and this, you know, the story behind the different characters and the factions and the technology that has created the rifts and everything like that, it's all sci-fi stuff, you know what I mean? It's really kind of this weird cross between fantasy and sci-fi.
Yeah, I hope they do become more prevalent with that, because I've told you, like, I don't think anyone's reluctance to play because it's fantasy is because they dislike fantasy. I think it's because they're shit up sick with fantasy, because in the past decade, there hasn't been a legitimate, like, contender, you know, sci-fi MMO that stuck around for very long that was any good. So we've been playing the same genre for such a long time that it becomes stale. So if they were to, like, you know, make that a bigger, prominent part of the expansion, that would probably satisfy a lot more players. And who knows how many people that'll pull in, but it'll definitely make me not feel like so, like, wow, I've been playing a fantasy game for a decade. I mean, I love Rift, but it does eventually at some point become, like, really stale.
Well, they've revealed the new Mage Soul, which is the Harbinger, and the Harbinger, I think, does an excellent job reflecting the sci-fi elements within Rift, because the way the Harbinger works is the Harbinger actually takes the mage's current weapon, like a staff, and uses magitech. It's not pure magic. There's some, I think it's like an Ethian technology or something that they use to transform the staff in, the staff into a scythe. I was like, staff? What was that? Staff? They use the...
What?
They use it to, yeah, what?
What?
They use it to transform the staff into a scythe, an axe, or a two-handed sword. And what do you guys think about this thing? We're going to go over all of the abilities and stuff, but like, what was your first impressions of the Harbinger?
Oh, I really liked it. I was hoping for Geomancer, but it was actually a lot better than I thought it was going to be. It was very interesting. You had the melee DPS thing, which was the other route I thought they could have gone. So, I mean, you know, you knew it had to be one of those two things. But I thought it was really interesting and very unique, and the way it was set up kind of reminded me of a class from Dark Age of Camelot that some people may know called the Veilwalker, which was a cloth-wearing melee DPS class. And you kind of have the element of summoning weapons like you have in Guild Wars 2 with the Elementalist. So it kind of, you know, marries some different other games' ideas, and really, I thought, came up with a brilliant concept.
All I want to say was I was nearly dead on, because I said that it was going... I said it was going to be a tank, sure, I was wrong. I didn't think it was going to shapeshift like the Geomancer, so I never thought that. But I did think that it was going to be a mixture of ranged and melee, like similar to like Paragon or Riftblade, whatever, where it has like enough range to be ranged if it's in a pinch, but it won't have enough to do a full rotation, which is exactly how it's going to be with the Harbinger. And I also said that they would probably wind up making it some sort of thing where it uses mage's spells, but they like are instant cast, you only proc them, which again,
yep,
is also true. I really like the soul. I think it's pretty cool. I think that if I was trying, I would want like anything that a soul is missing, not even necessarily like, you know, this soul is missing a tank, more so like this soul is missing melee, period, I want to implement, because that way, like, no matter what calling you are, everything is covered. There's no like, oh, I really like this calling, but it doesn't have this, you know what I mean? So
right.
I hope they continue that with every single one of the callings, so therefore there's none of that. Like, it's like you literally have at least one option if you want any type of experience. So I think it was pretty cool. I actually really liked the thing where the weapon changes, you know, onto the scythe. I thought that looked pretty amazing. So graphically, it looked insane. I'm obviously haven't even touched the mage in this game yet, so I can't give my opinion how it is. And I thought it was really cool that, and I hope that every other calling goes in this direction, that they're saying how much it has synergy with the other souls. And I hope that's like with all the new souls, that they have tremendous synergy with the pre-existing souls.
So I wasn't that far off, right? I said it was going to be a shapeshifter of some kind. And if you guys remember, right, when we were talking about... Listen. When we were talking about the Geomancer, if you guys remember, I said, well, maybe it won't be like a full shapeshifter. Like, it'll just like not shapeshift, but get like form like an armor around its arms or something, its fists, and maybe like a rock helmet or rock around its chest or something. So this isn't really a full shapeshifter, but it's kind of a shapeshifter, right? Because he's shapeshifting his weapon.
No.
I think it counts.
It's not a shapeshifter. The weapon's changing. You said the mage was going to shapeshift. The mage isn't shapeshifting. The weapon is.
But it's like a partial shapeshifter because his weapon is.
Honestly, all that made me think of, and Matt talked about it off air, was that how can they do that but not introduce weapon wardrobe? I'm sorry. That was like the first thing that popped in my mind.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah. We'll go on that, because that's true. It's like, okay, well, here you're concerned, right, about the animations of the different, you know, the different weapons in the hands of different races and stuff like that. So then you go and you create the Harbinger, which has the axe animations, you know, the pole arm animations and the two-handed sword animations, but he's wielding a staff. So either it's total bull what they're telling us about weapon wardrobe, or they've overcome the hurdles that they were looking at for the Harbinger, and now they're going to look at applying, you know, what they do with the Harbinger's weapons to weapon wardrobe. So maybe we will see weapon wardrobe, and they're just being really quiet about it.
Sure, hope so.
I think the issue is more two-handed to one-handed, as far as the technical things. But then again, I do think they've also overcome it, and I think we'll see it in Storm Legion. Maybe not but very soon after.
But my only gripe with that, and I'm not, it's not like I, you know, was the source of it. a million people have said it. I don't think anyone really wants that. If they simply put in, here's a staff, I don't like it, I want it to look like this staff, and that's the only way it would work, I think everyone would be satisfied with that.
Yeah, which we've gone over that several times, but it is very interesting that the Harbinger is essentially using skills to mirror what we want from a weapon wardrobe. But I am very happy with the Harbinger. It synergizes extremely well, according to the stream, with the Stormcaller, the Pyromancer, and the Chloromancer. And that made me extremely happy because I am a huge Stormcaller advocate, and I can't wait to see the Stormcaller in the expansion. So what do you say we go over some of the abilities? Because I've actually gone through the reveal video and pulled some of the tooltips out for some of the spells.
Sounds good to me.
Kind of see a little bit about, you get to see a little bit about how it plays if you watch the actual reveal trailer, which was originally aired on MMORPG.com, right?
Yeah,
Twitch.tv/MMORPG.com was where the original air was. And I think it should be on the Rift YouTube channel as well now if you want to go. If you haven't seen the Harbinger reveal video yet, you get a little bit of an idea about some of its play style. But, I mean, mostly you just see a lot of melee animations and some teleporting around. So we actually went and pulled some tooltips for you.
I'm going to put in chat a link that someone compiled the talent tree on Rift Reddit.
Yeah, someone did the same thing that I did with these tooltips here and put it on Rift Reddit. So go to Rift Reddit. Joe's going to put a link into the chat for those that are here live with us. And I went through and I actually found, I didn't see on this Reddit link, I didn't see anything for the actual spells coming like off of the action bar. So I actually went through and I pulled off as many as I could find from the action bar. And here's some of them. I might have missed some, but here's a good portion of them anyways. We have Blade Mark, which is a instant cast debuff on a 1 minute cooldown. Marks the enemy for 15 seconds. Melee range attacks by the mage on another enemy deal their damage to the enemy marked as well. So this is kind of like, that's kind of like, seems like their way of adding a cleave effect to the Harbinger.
Interesting concept. I didn't actually see that one when they went through the tooltips, but that's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, and if you ever have like a council fight, you could throw your mark on one of the bosses in the council fight and be DPSing the other one.
Yeah, I have a feeling they're going to have a lot of, this isn't really a stance, but like a stance like esque type abilities, you know?
Yeah, which they do have, actually. I've got tooltips for those. Those are the different weapons. All have different stances.
Yeah.
I don't have these in any particular order, so we're just kind of randomly going through. This next one is Blazing Light, which costs 422 mana. It's an instant cast damage ability. Melee range grants 9 charge and deals 7,130 life damage over 8 seconds and increases the mage's dodge chance by 10%. So I thought this was kind of interesting because, one, this is life damage, so you can see the synergy this could have with Life-Giving Veil from the Chloromancer. And two, 10% dodge chance. I thought it wasn't a tank.
Yeah, I found that really funny in the live stream. They talked about how there's a lot of survivability cooldowns throughout the tree. And then even there, when they tried to elaborate as why they didn't put a tank in, they didn't even really elaborate. They just said like they didn't think it was the correct time, that maybe at a later point they would. And I thought it was kind of funny because they almost like laid the groundwork for one, but then they just didn't do it. I'm amazed with the people on Reddit, like how they got, or not even that, just like how much stuff was actually revealed throughout the video. You see half the tree in that picture.
Elrar is a sneaky sumbitch, and I love him, because if you watch, there's no reason, one, Elrar plays the game, he knows how the game works, there's no reason for his cursor to be all over the place. He was clicking stuff on purpose, because he knew we were going to go hunting for tooltips, and Elrar, if you're listening, I love you for it. I know you did this on purpose.
Definitely.
Sneaky bastard, but awesome. So yeah, so what you were going to say about the dodge there, Kel?
Yeah.
Okay. So the dodge thing, what I thought was interesting about that is you've got the ability to, you have a lot of mobility options, and you know they talked about dodge, but I think there was also some stuff in there about parry as well, or something like that, because they were talking about how they need that to be able to survive. If they're a melee class, they're going to be up close and taking damage, and they're only a cloth wearing class, so you got to have options for avoidance. To get rid of some of the damage if you don't have straight up armor.
Yeah, but couldn't they just put that like into a stance though? That's what I was like confused about. You can just attach that to a stance. That's what I thought was weird.
The axe is supposed to be more of a defensive and healing based stance, from what they said. They didn't show it though.
Right.
I think
they also said that there
were some absorb shields too, if I remember correctly. Which is also what we guessed, that if it was indeed a tank, it would be pretty heavy reliant on that.
Let's see. This was actually a passive that I pulled from the talent tree. It's just Combat Mastery, increase your damage by 10%, 5/5 talent. Here's another ability, Disabling Shock. It's a control ability, 253 mana, instant cast with a 30-second cooldown, adds 9 charge, and stuns the target for 5 seconds. Deals absolutely no damage at all. So 5-second stun, that's pretty hefty. So I can see the advantages to having that in PvP, and I think a lot of these abilities, there's at least a handful of these that actually stun, by the way, and we'll get to them. Here's another one, Eldritch Armor, which I believe they talked about a little bit in the stream. It's kind of like a bread and butter self-buff here. Grants the mage's slashing attacks a 50% chance to reduce the cast time of their next ability by 2 seconds. Cannot occur more than once every 3 seconds and lasts 1 hour. So this is probably the most interesting thing I think about the Harbinger right here is the Eldritch Armor, because the Eldritch Armor is what's really going to provide that amazing synergy with almost any of the other souls, I think, because being able to cast, you know, instant cast or near instant cast some of these really long cast spells while you're sitting there beating on somebody in melee is going to be awesome.
Yeah, I think the class as a whole is pretty reliant on these, like I said earlier, these stance-like things, which makes, you know, me almost kind of jealous. I wish other classes had this. And I think they set it up in a way, like I said earlier, that, like, depending on what stance you're in and depending on how you spec, you could, you know, combine it with, like, virtually any other spec in the mage, you know, calling, which is really good. And I hope that all the other, new souls that are revealed are the same way, that they have tremendously good synergy.
The Harbinger reveal has definitely raised the bar for me, for my expectations of the other callings, I'll tell you that. Oh, go ahead.
Did you ever read the Tempest Armor, though? Because I was just reading that in the talent tree. That's pretty interesting as well.
Do you have that in front of you? You can go ahead. I don't think I have
yeah.
up for that.
Increases all resists by 50, single target damaging air and water abilities have a 40% chance to make the mage's next AoE effect spell instant. Can I occur more than once every 10 seconds, last 1 hour? So I think I'm assuming that's going to, like, synergize, you know, with Stormcaller.
Yeah, they're probably looking for you to be able to use Tempest Armor to instant cast, like, Hailstorms. And there's several new abilities that go with Stormcaller as well. They're going to be AoEs. But they're going to have relatively, you know, relatively long cast times. Like, there's one that I don't have it in front of me right this moment. But it will hit one target, and it'll damage up to 10 people around that target based on the number of electrified charges on them, and it does not consume the charges, and it's just a massive nuke. It's like a Static Nova or something. I forget what it was called. So they've added a lot more AoE to the Stormcaller, and it's definitely going to synergize really well with the Harbinger. Glaring Fetters is another Harbinger ability. It's a control ability, 30-meter range, 422 mana, instant cast, with a 20-second cooldown, adds 9 charge. Snares the enemy, reducing their movement speed by 30%, deals 1,429 tooltip life damage each second the enemy is moving. Kind of interesting. Introspection. Self-utility, no cost, instant cast, cooldown 1 minute, causes damaging attacks to return 10% of the mage's mana, and reduces the mage's damage by 30%. So it's basically like a purpose or a ageless ice from the cleric. Lightning Blade. Now we're getting the stances. This is the stance that uses the two-handed sword. It's a 422 mana cost, buff, instant cast, 9 charge, adds 9 charge. Summons a blade of electrical energy. Slashing attacks deal an additional 654 air damage. All other damaging attacks have a 20% chance to deal an additional 654 air damage. Lasts for 1 hour. So that is the two-handed sword. What I find interesting with this, by the way, is that using the Lightning Blade will actually add 9 charge. So you could potentially, right, and there's no cooldown on these, on the blade abilities to transform your weapon, you could potentially switch between blades to build charge in between fights.
Yeah, I think the class as a whole almost feels like a disabler, because there's so many stuns and slows and so many things like that, that I almost feel like it's going to be like a really good PvP spec.
This is going to be an amazing PvP spec, especially if you synergize it with Stormcaller, because then you're going to essentially be a melee character with a near 100% uptime, 50% run speed bonus from Ride the Wind. Plus, you got 2 teleports and a charge, which we'll get to in a minute. Phantom Blades is a utility, 253 mana, instant cast, 30-second cooldown. Increases the range of the mage's single-target melee attacks to 30 meters for 15 seconds. So this has a 50% uptime and gives all of the Harbinger's melee abilities a maximum 30-meter range. That sounds a little OP. Like, this is probably going to have to get... This is going to have to get retuned at some point, I think, before it comes out.
I was going to say they may have to reduce the damage on it a little bit. Like, you know, if you're going to be attacking at range, like, it reduces damage, like, by, say, 20%, so it's not completely overpowered.
Yeah.
Well, I expected that any soul they released that was melee-oriented for the maze, they would have something to bridge the gap from going, you know, to running in on something or something that got away from you, but this is kind of a little... you know, over the top. This isn't just bridging the gap.
This just this buff here, this cooldown, and on such a short cooldown too, reminds me almost of like the Harbinger is going to end up feeling like the old school Rift Blade. If you guys remember it all, or Kel might, I don't know if you would, Joe. Some of our listeners might. Way back when Rift first came out, Rift Blades were like pure ranged.
Yep, and they had to nerf them pretty quickly because they only were their range, but they did insane damage.
Yeah, they were extremely OP. They shouldn't have had that much range available, like 100% of the time, with no sacrifice whatsoever. Considering that, you know, they had the damage that they had because they were supposed to be like a melee build. We have phase step. Let's see, damage 507 mana, instant cast, cooldown 30 seconds, adds 9 charge, teleports the mage behind up to 5 enemies, dealing 4,623 to 5,110 air damage. Plus weapon damage to each enemy. So this is worded a little bit weird. It says teleport the mage behind up to 5 enemies. I think it's only worded that way because it's trying to tell you that you'll teleport behind your target of the phase step and damage up to 5 enemies around that target.
Someone mentioned it like in chat when they were doing the live stream and in forums, you know, thereafter. But you could tell the numbers are getting pretty bloated and inflated for the expansion just by the tooltips.
Yeah, these are going up, which also means that our gear is going to end up being irrelevant. We're definitely not digging 60 and running around in ID relics. We're going to be using Storm Legion Blues.
I remember Wrath. I remember having like a couple pieces at tier 6, the best you could possibly get, and Burning Crusade, and by like 72, I was putting greens on.
Yeah, I think by like level 52, we're going to be out of whatever we had, you know, at level 50. As far as this ability goes, though, I really think that this is kind of cool, because what I was thinking of with the wording of that is maybe they mean that it's something like that one strike ability from League of Legends that Master Yi does, where he dashes from target to target. Wouldn't that be cool?
Oh, that'd be pretty what? Sick. That would be awesome. I think you're right. Teleports behind up to 5 enemies. Yeah. It's going to be like Flash. Teleport behind number 1, number 2, number 3, number 4, number 5. Damage each one of them. That's going to be cool. So here's the next ability on the list. Planar Retreat. Control ability, 253 mana, instant cast. 30-second cooldown, stuns for 5 seconds, and teleports the mage backwards 20 meters, removing all crowd control effects. Wow! Like, just wow! Holy crap! Seriously, you get a 5-second stun. This is all in one ability, which means this is one global cooldown. You get a 5-second stun, a 20-meter reverse teleport, so you get a retreat, and a break free in one global.
Nerf it, please.
That is so overpowered for PvP. That's
definitely only has a 30-second cooldown too. Like, that was like a 2-minute cooldown, and be like, all right, that's not bad. But 30 seconds. But you know what? This is just the nature of expansions, you know? Like, things are always so, like, off in the beginning, and they just have to slowly be tuned. So I'm not surprised to see these high numbers. Those could be reduced, and these ridiculous cooldowns, they're all going to get nerfed, so.
Well, the crazy thing about this is that this is a great example of what a lot of people feel like is a huge problem with Rift PvP, which is multiple effects going off all at the same time. You know what I mean? Too many abilities or too many talents can proc too many things all at once, all inside of a global cooldown.
Yeah.
There's basically no global cooldown in Rift PvP because there's too many passives and stuff going off, and this is a prime example. Here we have one ability that is a CC, a retreat, and a break free, all in one. That's way too much, in my opinion. I think they should take away the remove crowd control effects and probably lower the stun if they're going to keep the stun on it.
Yeah, I was going to say keep the retreat, and then the other two are, you know, subject to change, basically. Or you could, like, get rid of the stun, keep the remove thing, but then put the cooldown higher for, like, 2 minutes.
The other option that I think they could do with this, too, is if they replace the stun with a knockback. So you push them away from you, and you retreat away from them, so you both kind of split from one point. Not only would that look kind of cool, but it would also be the knockback is on a different diminishing returns counter than stuns are. So you won't be unable to use your plan of retreat or anything like that because you might have stunned them with one of the other Harbinger stuns.
That would be cool. I think that's a better alternative than just nerfing the crap out of this. But I understand why it's there. I think this is primarily for a lot of these abilities. I look at them and it looks like they designed them specifically for PvE. Because I think that was kind of their baseline. And they said that we're designing these classes right now for fun, and they're not designed for balance at all yet. Some of these abilities may not even make it to live. They specifically said that. So, I mean, I'm not overly concerned about it. But, this sounds like a cool ability, but it's definitely overpowered for PvP if they leave it the way it is. There's no doubt.
Yeah, all of these new souls are definitely in the extremely early stages, so we can't by any means judge, you know, these as a final product whatsoever. The only thing that this specific ability really brings to my attention is I'm concerned that Tryon might not be taking the current state of PvP quite as seriously as a lot of us would like them to take it in terms of, you know, how much break-free effects there are and how many passive effects and multiple effects can go off inside of one global cooldown. So hopefully they are considering that, and they're already looking at this ability as, hey, that's way too many effects all at once. But definitely going to be fun stuff, I'll tell you that. That's going to be fun. Here's the Reaper's Blade. This is the scythe weapon stance. So when you have the scythe out instead of the two-handed weapon, adds 9 charge, summons a deadly scythe of magical energy. Slashing attacks deal an additional 654 life damage and heal the mage by 262. All other damaging attacks have a 20% chance to trigger this effect. Increases the mage's damage by 10% for 6 seconds if an enemy dies within 5 seconds of the mage damaging them. So this sounds like this is the scythe, again, the scythe weapon, the energy scythe, that will probably synergize the best with the Chloromancer, considering that it deals life damage.
Yeah, you know what I thought of when I saw this is I thought of Reaver, the original Reaver from way back.
Yep, that's true. Storm Shroud is a utility, instant cast, 1-minute cooldown, renders the mage invisible for up to 10 seconds. Using an ability or taking damage will break this effect. Mage is getting a stealth. It's a short stealth, 10 seconds every 1 minute, but it's basically a stealth. But they worded it as an invisibility. And, you know, if we base invisibility and stealth, if this is actually how they're doing it, off of what we saw in World of Warcraft, the mage can go invisible as well. But invisibility is a completely different effect than stealth. Stealth cannot see invisible, invisible cannot see stealth, etc. So I wonder how they're doing it in Rift. If the invisibility is a stealth, and if it is, on what stealth level it is. So will an assassin be able to see me? Or will a Nightblade be able to see me? Or whatever? Or is it going to be something entirely different?
I suspect it's going to be something different.
Yeah, it's hard to gauge because tooltips in this game, sorry to say, are one of the weaker parts of this game. They're not descriptive, and when they are, they're sometimes off base, and they're worded badly, etc.
Storm Slash, 384 mana, 9 charge, deals, I'm just going to start rounding off, 2800 to 3100 air damage, plus weapon damage, just standard melee attack. Let's see, okay, we're back to the beginning now, marks the enemy, yep, so that's what I found for the Harbinger stuff. So overall, it looks like the Harbinger's got a lot of control. There's going to be a lot of stance swapping, there's a lot of teleporting, it's very mobile, and it's going to synergize very well with both the Stormcaller and the Chloromancer, so I'm pretty excited for this.
I think what's really cool, more than anything, from what I could tell, is that synergizing with a separate tree is going to be like all of like one key press because of a stance. You don't have to like respec, you know, deep or different tree.
This is true. I'm really concerned now a little bit for for what the other callings are going to be. Like, you know, we were talking about the warrior was like overpowered back when Riftblade was pure ranged. And if you look at the silhouettes on stormlegion.com for the classes, they show from left to right, they show mage, warrior, cleric, rogue from left to right. And the mage was the first. So I think the warrior is going to be second, and the warrior has a quiver on his back, so it's a bow spec.
Exactly what I want.
Yeah, but that's going to, I mean, can you imagine if you were had like picture the marksman, right? Picture being a marksman, but having 28 points in champion, What?
Yeah, but half those points, like, what are they even going to do? You know, they might not even affect... See, that's the only thing I worry about warriors, how they're going to make them synergize. Because half the stuff in other trees, like, how they're going to work with a range spec. And I wonder, because that just seems like a bigger hurdle than it is with the Harbinger, because they can do, like, I guess maybe they'll do stances, but what would they do with stances? They're going to make, like, certain champion abilities have 30-meter range or something? That'd be so odd.
I don't know. I mean, I hope that they don't, you know, give this bow spec something like, melee abilities can be used from 20 meters away for 10 seconds, because God knows I don't want to eat a rift strike from 20, 30 meters away.
I think it's going to be the other way around. Like, if someone gets near you, you won't be, like, you know, gimped because you range that melee thing. You'll be able to use melee things, like, to bridge the gap, like, if someone gets near you.
Well,
go ahead.
I kind of agree. Well, one thing I was thinking about this is, what if they take this in the direction of the original marksman spec, where the original marksman spec was you had to stand still, and since you're a warrior, you can take more damage, you can absorb more damage. See, the problem with marksman back then was if you had to stand still, you got your ass handed to you. So if they make a warrior spec that, well, you have to stand still, kind of like a sharpshooting kind of class, you know, where you do pretty good damage, but you have to stand still or, you know, relatively still. I think that can maybe work. And then, you know, if somebody gets close to you, you have that melee capability to be able to get away if you need to. So, you know, to create distance between you with, like, knockbacks and things like that.
It'd be cool if I could swing my bow at melee range. You know, like, someone gets near me and I hit them in the face and I run away.
I could definitely see you doing that for, like, some kind of, like, knockback ability. Like, get off of me! And you just, like, bap them in the face with the, you know, with the bow itself and knock them back 20 meters or something. Would be kind of funny. Hey, this is going to give you a little bit of synergy with the Thunderous Kick, right? You'll actually have a reason to use that now.
That is very true. That talent is so goddamn useless otherwise, so that's cool.
If you're not familiar with Champion, the Thunderous Kick is a one-point talent. Takes, I think it's 11 points to actually get it.
It's 11 or 6. I forget if it's on the second or third tier.
Yeah, it's either 6 or 11 points to get it. And basically, you do a Sparta Kick to their face, and you knock them back 20 meters. But all the warriors right now are melee, so why would you want to knock them back? Aside from using it for an extra interrupt, maybe, or just knocking a really dumb position player off a cliff. It's useless.
That and maybe like a desperation move, like, you know, you're about to die and there's melee and you kick them off. That's really like the only like legitimate thing I can, you know, think of.
But yeah, if you have a bow out, then, I mean, here you are sitting there being all Legolas and shit, and then they get right up in your face. And you're just all like, "This is Sparta!" Then you just like kick them in the face, Sparta style. That'd be great.
Minus the Sparta part, yeah, definitely.
Well, more to the now with what's going on with PvP. Tryon is doing something very, dare I say, cool, but also dangerous. They're experimenting right now on the PTS with removing the gear base, the gear grind for PvP. They're going to, they might normalize everybody's stats. Right now on the PTS, everybody's stats for PvP are normalized. So if you're in a Warfront or if you're in Conquest, you essentially all have the same stats, regardless of what gear you have on. Your gear has absolutely no effect whatsoever. Planar Attunement still affects it, however. Talents still affect it. Ability buffs still affect it. I believe weapon procs, trinkets, and synergy crystals also still work.
Yeah, that's correct. It's pretty much everything that you said. There were a couple of bugs as well. Some things that weren't working like they were supposed to, like in terms of like some of the heal debuffs weren't working properly. Like they were supposed to be 10%, but they were actually 50%, like they normally are on live. So that's supposed to be less. But
well, basically, last time Kel was on the show, we talked about this because we were just talking about the grind in general, and me and Kel are both in favor for it because PvP gear grinds, I just don't think are a necessity whatsoever. I'm actually like, extremely in favor of this, and everyone is anticipating them to put some sort of progression in terms of cosmetic gear similar to Guild Wars. So I hope something like that comes out, because I want them to add cosmetic gear and costume gear in general in the expansion, because there's very few of it right now, and I think that's like an untapped resource. So I really want them to add that, period. So it'd be awesome if it was as well as in PvP.
Well, that's the real trick. Like I was telling you guys, you know, like you said, like the last time Kel was on, like two or three episodes ago, was that I think it was like episode 20 we did it. We talked about this. What's your incentive going to be? I mean, the incentive right now is to do the grind, get the gear, become more powerful, and use that to gain the advantage over other players. players enjoy the concept of, well, I beat you because I'm better, not because I have more gear. But I'm for this if it's done right. I really am. But playing devil's advocate a little bit here, let's be honest. I mean, how much skill really happens in MMORPG PvP? You're pushing buttons, and even more so in Rift, you're pushing macros.
Well, yeah, but that's not the point, though. I mean, it's always going to be a small margin between, like, or at least I would assume so, you know, an average player and a great PvPer. The problem is that margin gets widened because of gear. So why not make the margin as small as possible?
Well, not only that, but the longer the time to kill is, which one of the things that this does is increase the time to kill by a pretty large margin, maybe too large of a margin. But if you have a larger time to kill, you have more strategy because you have more time to think and process things that are coming at you, and you have more time to react. And, you know, I mean, people who are good and have a good strategic mind, you know, will be able to perform better in this sort of PvP environment, and that's one of the big advantages to it, I think.
You know, I basically put a very small response post on the, you know, because there was so many pages of responses on the initial post that they put up. And I basically said, if you're in favor of this, you're basically the mentality of, I want to have fun, number one, and number two, I want to outsmart my opponent in every facet. And that means it doesn't matter what your gear is. Or if you're basically of the ganking mindset, which is that I want to have every advantage under the sun, which is what, in my opinion, kills the MMO genre, especially theme park genre MMOs, PvP. So if you're in favor of the first, then why would you care if you have more gear? And the other problem is, so many people and a lot of people in Ghost Rider talked about it, and even I think a couple people in No Quarter weighed in. The initial grind, it's not even so much that it's bad, it's just that it's so like demoralizing for new players. So if you remove that, you'll incorporate, you know, more people into the equation, period, because more people are going to be intrigued to play. I really just don't see a negative. At the end of the day, you want to look better and look more intimidating. I don't think people are going to be like, oh my god, new rank, I gained 5 strength and 12, you know, 6 endurance. These extremely minute, you know, stat upgrades are not the main motivation between getting, you know, ranking up. They just want to look better. At least that's my opinion.
I mean, you both know that I love when my character looks good. Like, like Joe, just yesterday, how many times did I re-dye my mage's armor just because I was trying to get the right look for me? I want my character to look good. That's one of my, honestly, prime reasons for playing, is I like to feel that connection to my character and be proud of him and walk around and feel like people look at me like, wow, he looks really good. Like, you know, I wonder what he's using in his wardrobe. I like that feeling. But I don't know if I would PvP for it. I don't know if that's enough for me. I don't know if I would PvP just for costumes.
But what are you getting out of getting, like, such, you know, because we even talked about it the other day when I was, you know, gearing my tank up. Like, especially in Rift, like, more so than in MMO, the gear upgrades are so small in terms of, you know, stats. So you're getting very, very small stat upgrades as it is. So the main reason you have to be playing is because you're having fun. Because if you're not having fun, then, I'm sorry, you're not playing PvP. Therefore, that is your main motivation behind playing, and that isn't going to change.
But if there's such small stat upgrades, then why is everybody crying zero to hero?
What do you mean they're crying? Oh, you mean because people above the whole conquest deal and how people are ranked 50?
Well, because, you know, you start out as a zero, right? But then by the time you hit 50, you're a hero because you've got such amazing gear that you just crush anybody else starting out. It's this whole zero to zero system with the PvP gear. But if the stat increases are so minimal and insignificant, then what's the problem with the system?
Well, of course, 0 to 50 is a I mean, like, as you're progressing. Like, if you get on and you play for 2-3 hours and you get a rank up and you get a new piece, then obviously those are extremely incremental. That's what I meant, like, as you're slowly progressing. I don't mean 0 to 50. Obviously, those are huge upgrades. But I don't know. If you're having fun playing PvP, that's your main motivation, not gear. If you're not having fun playing PvP, you don't like PvP.
Well, I love PvP because I love the competition and I like the challenge, but I also like that it's another way for me to feel my character progressing, because that's what I think MMORPGs as a genre have always been about, and what attracts people to them is, you know, at first you start out, you're level 1, you're leveling up through the PvE and doing your quests, you get to see your character progress, and that's what makes leveling fun, is you get more powerful, and you feel that, and you see that, and it's like, wow, my power strike went from hitting for 20 damage to hitting for 5,000, and it feels good. It doesn't matter how significant that number was on this, as far as like how well it scales based on level or versus other players or whatever. All you know is that feels good. to hit harder. It feels good to be more powerful. And you get the same feeling from progressing in PvP. So once you take that away, and all you're doing is progressing through costumes, I mean, you take away at least a portion of the fun for a lot of players.
Someone, I believe it was in Negative Ghost Rider, I think it, or it might have been Intrinsic from No Quarter, I'm not entirely sure, but they basically tried to explain, because someone was saying, similar to what you were saying, that they also want, but also they expanded upon that, that they wanted a normalization of PvE, and they basically went into this big thing that, like, PvE and PvP are completely two different animals, and they should not be, you know, comparable whatsoever in that arena. I couldn't agree more. I think what you're talking about progression is something that should always be something that happens in PvE. As far as PvP is concerned, the only thing you should be focused on is how well you're doing, how well you're performing, and what you said before about competition and the challenge. If it's a lack of challenge because you're having rank 50 gear and someone else is wearing rank 30 gear, that removes the core element of the entire process or the entire element of the game. So why would I ever do that? And the challenge, oh, another thing that's also good is that you never have an issue where, like I just said, where 50 versus a 30 or whatever, 40 versus a 20, it's always persistently equal and even. Therefore, the challenge is always higher. And when the challenge is higher, it's always more fun, period.
See, I think that they should just do seasons, to be honest, because...
Oh, God,
thing,
no.
Listen,
please,
though.
No.
Listen, the thing that you have to consider is that anybody who's rank 50 that's fully kitted out in rank 50 was rank 1 at some point. They were rank 1. They put in the time, and they have to go through the same thing that all the new rank 1s are going through, right? And they fought through it. The way that they got through it wasn't just enduring it, but was learning their specs, learning how to play, learning how to beat that guy that had the gear advantage over him by having a better spec and having better response time, better cooldowns and rotations and timings. And that's how they ranked up. Now that they are 50, why should the next rank 1 not have to go through what they went through to get to it? I think that the problem is that the people that are rank 50 have been rank 50 or rank 40 for so long. You know what I mean? So if you do seasons, then it becomes a race to get to that max rank gear. And then once you have it, yes, you are better, but you look at like the ladder, like who hit rank 50 first? There's a first place, a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth. And then a few months later, you reset the ladder and come out with a new set of gear, and then it's a race for that gear.
That would just kill PvP in this game. And it's exactly one of the big things that hurt World of Warcraft 2, doing the seasons and stuff. And I mean, they're kind of locked into it now because of the way the arena system works. But man, I mean, that's just not the way to do it. I agree with you that there needs to be maybe some incentive beyond, not necessarily for me because I'm okay with just cosmetic gear and PvPing because it's fun. But I know that there are people who definitely want to feel some sort of, you know, gain something power-wise, to gain something. You know, and me and you talked about, and I think it's in the show notes, about maybe getting some sort of ability system like Dark Age of Camelot had with their realm rank system, where you got long cooldown abilities, like where you could use maybe one in a match, you know, because they have like a 10 or 15 minute cooldown, but they're like really cool abilities.
It's actually funny, Kel actually wrote a post on the thread, I don't even remember if you remember writing it, Kel, about how, you know, the vertical versus horizontal progression, and that the vertical progression in terms of gear is unsustainable, and WoW proved that, and I couldn't agree more, because WoW eventually became stale, and the only reason it was sustained whatsoever was because of Arena, at least in my opinion, because that was like the highest competition period. So, and people have even suggested that when they do eventually introduce some sort of Arena, that will have gear attached to it if they want it. That's still up for debate, but I don't think it should be attached to regular warfronts. You could also make it so gears takes in, if they ever introduce raid warfronts, gear takes place in that. The only thing that I see a problem, people brought it up, and it's not really about the system, it's that people were saying people who only PvP and they don't PvP at all, they use their PvP gear not only PvP, but they do stuff out in the world. And you're going to have to give them some sort of gear. You can't like bottleneck them into, you know, doing experts and doing raids to get gear in order to be, you know, make stuff easier out in the world, because they originally did that PvP in order to do that. So that has to be some sort of alternate set of gear for those type of people, though I think that's a pretty big minority. I think a lot of people play PvP, but the people that only play PvP, I think that's a small minority. So,
well, if you're talking about using PvP gear out in the world to do PvP objectives, then that's something that can be easily solved through rifting.
Well, I just didn't mean that, though. I meant, like, PvE stuff. Like, if they're doing that just to, I don't know, do experts and whatnot because they flat out don't have PvE gear. And eventually, obviously, PvP gear is way better than expert gear, even though the stats are distributed.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. That kind of gear can be supplied through Rift rewards. which is fine.
Yeah.
But what concerns me that you brought that up is what's going to happen to world PvP? Are they just scrapping the idea and the concept of PvP rifts? Because
I don't remember if it was official or someone brought it up. I hope Kel knows. Pretty sure someone said that only instance PvP would be affected by normalization. Anything outside that will be fair game for gear.
Yeah, it's only instance PvP. Daglar said that it was just going to be for instance stuff only, conquests and war fronts. Like if you duel somebody now on the PTS, the normalization stuff doesn't kick in. So it's only for instance PvP.
Well, that's exactly my point. So what happens, right, when they take away the ranked gear, the PvP gear, and they take away that, the Valor gear and the Vengeance gear and everything like that, but they're still balancing skills so that they work differently in PvP for the sake of war fronts and conquests and everything, and then you're on a PvP server and you want to do a PvP rift, or you run into somebody on the opposite faction and you want to kill each other, you're not going to have any Valor.
I actually think they're going to keep releasing gear, to be honest, just because of that one very reason.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. But then again, world PvP, I've always felt that world PvP shouldn't really be fair, because world PvP is a whole different thing. It doesn't need to be fair or balanced, because it's never going to be. Someone can jump you while you're fighting three mobs, and that's life. That's the way it is.
If you're not going to regulate it, which overwhelming majority of theme park MMOs never regulate world PvP, then I'm sorry, it's your fault for rolling out a PvP server. That's how I look at it.
Well, I'm not saying that they need a balanced world PvP, because I agree with you guys. I think that is the prime attraction to world PvP is, the ability to gank and to have either large battles or horribly outnumbered battles or just little one-on-ones or something. That's just the nature of it. It's just catch somebody off guard or feel like you always have to look over your shoulder. And a lot of people really enjoy that mentality. But, they do have to balance it to a point to where, in Storm Legion, like we were looking at the Stormcaller abilities earlier, there was one that hit for over 7,000 tooltip damage. In current game, if there was no Valor at all, that could one-shot somebody out in the open world. You wouldn't have a chance at all whatsoever. So they need something to bring it down, and that something has been Valor. So they're going to have to keep making PvP gear. It could be a little bit confusing if they keep releasing PvP gear with Valor and Vengeance on and all these PvP stats they've come up with, but then it doesn't actually work in the war fronts.
I don't think it's confusing. I think most people are not even going to buy it. If they buy it, it's going to be because of the look.
No, that's true. It could just be that they're not actually costing pieces, that they're still going to continue releasing the gear. It's just the stats aren't going to be effective anywhere other than in the open world. Could very easily be a good way to do it, but it still leaves you with one more thing. What now, if this happens, because this is still a change that they're experimenting with. We don't know if this is going to happen, but if this happens, what is there to set apart a 51 Saboteur from the other 51 Saboteur in the Warfront? Because people really need that. They need a little bit. They need something to specialize into, even if it's only a small amount. They need something that's going to set them apart and set their build apart from somebody else. Otherwise, we're really just playing like an advanced World of Warcraft, like a better-looking World of Warcraft, if everybody's just specking 51 points and everybody's all the same.
Well, there's multiple routes they can do that. I almost anticipate them to have, a secondary, PA system just for PvP because of that, so that way you can, spec different trees for whatever specialty you want to go for, or something like that. It doesn't matter if it's a PA or it's, what Kel said earlier about abilities you gain or something you put on your gear. I think there'll be very small things like that that'll dictate your playstyle. So set you apart.
Yeah, what I was thinking is basically set everyone up with a baseline number of stats. Say you have 500 or whatever the baseline is for your particular class, and then you have a certain number of gems that you can slot onto your armor, two or three gems per armor piece, to increase your stats in whatever direction you want to emphasize your character in. So if I'm a Saboteur and I want to go crit, crit heavy, because crit really helps Saboteurs, and then attack power, I can do that, and it differentiates me possibly from the next Saboteur who's, also got the same baseline stats. So it's sort of, someone in chat actually said it's like Guild Wars 2. It would be similar to Guild Wars 2, because if you don't have that, everyone's the same. And that's one of the big arguments that Icehole, was saying, and he had a great quote, and Matt, you can read it after this, because it's worth reading. It's a great quote.
It's definitely worth reading.
Yeah. But, I mean, you really have to do something to differentiate it, because otherwise everyone's going to be the same, and it'll get boring after a while. And there's no theory crafting that goes into PvP. One of the great things about Guild Wars 2 is because you can have that level of customization. I mean, there's huge amounts of theory crafting going on right now. There's even, you know, shows dedicated to it. So, I mean, I think Rift could do something like that. And I think that maybe they will. This is just very early in the development process, and they're just trying to get some numbers to get this ready for Storm Legion. Because, I don't know, I can't remember if you've already said this, but this is going to be for Storm Legion. This is not going to be for Vanilla Rift.
Right. If they actually do go through with this stat normalization and PvP change, this will not be something. It's going to go live on the live servers for 1 week just for testing purposes, and then everything's going to go back to the way that we know it right now. And the final product of this stat normalization for PvP will not come out until Storm Legion is actually released in live, or possibly with 2.0, but it's definitely not going live like permanently right now. And it's something that they're absolutely still discussing and working on. Like Planar Tumen, a lot of people are really concerned about the effect that Planar Tumen is going to have on this. Actually, real quick, I really want to read this quote from Icehole, because I thought that this was great. In terms of having that flexibility to customize your role and your specialty in PvP and everything, eventually getting stale if there is no customization like gem slotting or anything like that. Icehole had said, "Because there is one thing being a cookie cutter and another thing being a Mr. Potato Head. Mr. Potato Head is balanced, but he has options. Cookie cutters make cool cookies, but eventually you run out of sprinkles." Couldn't have put it better myself.
Yeah, that pretty much says it all.
Eventually you run out of sprinkles. It's true. I mean, at some point, the little things that don't really matter, you can't really sprinkle anything new onto that cookie anymore. It's just the same thing that everybody else is doing. You've got to have room to expand on your idea and expand on what you enjoy. So, you know, when they first announced Storm Legion, like way back when, they sent out a box of clues. And they sent it to, was it like GameSpot or something? You guys remember this?
Yeah.
It had a cloak in it, and it had a map, and it had some clippings from the wars and everything like that. And one of the clues that we haven't heard anything about has something to do with the prisms. These crafting prisms, I forget what they're actually called. Remember, they sent them a prism, yeah. And there was a prism in the box.
Wasn't there like 12 of them in the box or something like that?
I don't remember how many there were, but they definitely sent them at least one prism. And everybody related this to a crafting item that isn't actually really used for anything. It's completely worthless. It's used for like one recipe in the whole game. That would be interesting if they changed that into some kind of stat gem. So you would have like sockets in your gear, a la like Guild Wars 2 has, and you could get these prisms, or maybe even craft these prisms, bring some more crafting and some more economy back to the game, craft these prisms, and they could be, you know, plus 1% increased damage to damage over time effects, or 1% increased damage for fire.
Yeah, I think I'd be okay with that. I mean, the only problem with that is if they make it related to crafting, then if you're not a crafter, then you have to buy it, and then that's a little bit of a loop that you have to, you know, jump through, something. I don't know about that, but I mean, I guess I'm okay with it, because we do need something for crafting in Rift. Rift crafting, I think, is horrible. It really could be a lot better. So something, anything to make crafting a little bit more interesting could be cool.
Yeah, like I said earlier, anything that's small and like affects gameplay, but not like in a ridiculous, you know, extent, like you just said, 1% to something, that's going to make you want to, you know, play a certain way, but it's not going to like make you too focused in that direction, basically. So, and it'll be something small that you can work at, but it's, again, it won't be something that's too overwhelming or will hurt the system.
Yeah, they definitely need to keep the bonuses small. And actually, like Kel was talking about using gemming and stuff like that for like crit, like if you want to be more crit based, like marksman or something, or crit based saboteur. I don't know if crit is a good idea, though. I think that they should probably, I want to know what you guys think on this too, and then we're going to wrap things up, but I think that they should stick to like damage types or like healing types, because once you get into something as broad as crit, you're essentially just changing where the stats are coming from. You're not actually normalizing anything.
Yeah, I was like, I'm gonna say that. Like, I would rather them do stuff like you said before, like damage to fire, or even if they did damage to like, you know, like damage over time thing, like you said, like that's fine. As long as it's not like crit, that would just be stupid. Because then, like you said, you're just gonna continue to want to stack that. And it's just gonna be, all you're changing is where the crit's coming from.
Well, there's always going to be caps, so, I mean, you can only really stack it so far. I mean, I think Guild Wars 2 has one gem where you can, or one rune, where you can add crit and that's it. And then there are a couple that can increase crit damage, which, you know, is something. I don't know how I feel about increasing crit damage, but, you know, I mean, I think some classes are so heavily crit influenced that, you know, having the ability to increase crit wouldn't actually be a bad thing. You just don't want to make it ridiculous. But, I mean, if you're having everyone stuck at a baseline of 20% crit, that really potentially hurts some classes where crit is incredibly important. So,
well, when Storm Legion comes out, they are going to redesign the souls, right? So, like, for, like, a Marksman or a Saboteur where crit is extremely important, those are probably going to have some crit passives in them that are going to make up for that.
Yeah, I'm seeing the exact same thing.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not so sure. We'll see what happens with that. But, I mean, I think, you know, if you have a cap in place for crit, I don't think it, you know, it's not going to get ridiculous. It's not like you can stack up to, like, 100% crit, and then all of a sudden you're ridiculous. And that's one of the scary things about Guild Wars 2 is you can't actually go. I had 84% crit on one of my characters, you know, from stacking decks and from stacking crit and stuff. You suffer in other areas big time, though. I mean, you have, like, the survivability of, a spider. I mean, you basically die for three hits.
A spider. I like how you use the spider because, you know, we are playing an MMORPG, so spiders are very popular. Killing spiders.
Yeah. Killing 10 spiders for every quest.
Yeah, go out, kill 10 spiders. Collect 8 spider eggs. Anyways, so I wonder, they're probably not going to put sockets on the gear itself. What do you guys think about having these little Guild Wars 2 style gem bonuses and stuff like that? What if these were the new PvP sigils instead? Because there's some discussion going on the forums about how much planar attunement, which still works right now in the current normalization, the current incarnation of this normalization, planar attunement bonuses still work. Your sigil bonuses, your source machine bonuses still work, your trinket bonuses still work, your synergy crystal bonuses all this other stuff still works. It's really just your actual armor and your weapons. So if they took away planar attunement and they took away the sigil bonuses, like you could gain base stats off your sigil unless you had those gems, maybe that would work. Maybe that would be a good place for it.
I think that what they're basically doing with the testing is they're going to start off very fundamental. Like you said, only your armor and your weapons don't count. And then I have this feeling they're going to keep getting like more and more focused where less and less stuff is going to count. You know what I mean? Because you basically want to start like a, you know, have like a starting point. And obviously no gear, no weapons is like given, like that has to happen for normalization. Then everything else is like subject to change.
So are you saying having a sigil that actually overrides, like, you know, and what you slot into the sigil, you know, your essences and stuff actually override the normalization? Because that's actually a decent idea, I think. And
yeah, that way if you have any, like, PvE or raid lessers that have, like, you know, insane stats on them, those won't work. Those won't function at all. But there are the PvP-only essences that you can use in a PvP-only sigil, where with that equipped, those bonuses will apply.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea. And then, actually, you could limit some of the more powerful things like AP and crit to only being on graders, you know, because, you know, you get the two, so that actually limits it a little bit, so you can't make it ridiculous. That's actually a pretty good idea, I think.
As me and Matt always say, why aren't we developers?
Well, I haven't sent my resume to try on yet, but I'm going to start working on it tonight. and I do want to give Tryon some... They deserve credit for this, the way that they are doing it, because it's such a controversial thing to do, and it's such a massive change. I would say it's probably the most important decision for them to make for Rift's future is doing this. This is really going to determine the audience that they bring in and the direction that PvP goes from here on out. And even if it's not their focus, it's a very strong desire for a lot of players to have quality PvP in the game that they enjoy. So this is extremely important, but they're actually doing this right as far as the testing-wise, and I want to make sure before we go, we give Tryon credit for the testing, because they're doing 1 week, and they're leaving it up 100% uptime, I believe, right? Correct? On the PTS. The changes are up there. You can download the PTS, go on there and test it then. And when that week is over, they're going to take their collection of data, and they're going to put these changes on the live servers for 1 week to test it from a bigger audience, because let's face it, we can't all make it onto the PTS, and I think a good portion of people, the majority of people, don't bother going to the PTS.
Yep, and that's a mistake they made with Conquest, so they're not going to make that mistake again.
Yeah, and that's actually something that Elroy specifically said to me, that they weren't going to make that same mistake again. And I had heard that they may do it as early as Friday for the test on the live servers.
I really hope that this is something that they stick with, because, I mean, you have to test these things on the live servers, and you have to do it as a test, and you have to make sure that people know that it's a test, you know what I mean? But this is the best way to do it, and we've said constantly that here's all these... like all these half ideas that we brought up over the course of the show, the course of our 24 episodes, a lot of them could have been probably full ideas if they had enough testing put into it. But they never hit the live shards until they were actually like ready for release, quote unquote, ready for release. So they never saw enough testing.
Yep. Yeah. This would definitely solve that problem.
Yeah. Oh, and I forgot to mention earlier, but I wanted to bring it up, the planar attunement thing. I'm against them allowing planar attunement into this normalization from the regular ones. The PvP PA tree, I'm okay with that because it's relatively small and it only has one tier. But like some of these other PA trees, when you get up into like 3 or 4 PA trees, if they allow that to count over top of normalization.
Especially if you're PA cat.
Yeah, it could be bad. They need to take that out for the regular
ones. It's also a potentially a longer grind than even having to go through the PvP ranks trying to get PA capped.
Definitely.
But you know, as we've said, very, very early stages might not even happen at all. Trion's just testing the waters with it, seeing if it's an option. So if you're one of those people that's flipping out for one side or the other because this is going on or how they're doing it or whatever, we don't know what kind of incarnation it's going to take on yet. Have some patience, do the tests, give your feedback on the forums, stay positive, because that's what they really need to make this happen. But that's all we got this week. I mean, I want to talk about more stuff, to be honest, but I think we're almost 2 hours in.
Yep, save it for next week, man.
Two hours in? What? Can I get a what?
No.
Cal, can I get a what? What?
No.
Whatever, alright. For all the latest news on Rift and the show, you can follow us on YouTube at youtube.com/riftovercast, on Facebook at facebook.com/riftovercast, on Twitter at riftovercast, and now on Google+ at gotoplus.me/riftovercast. You can also contact us via email at riftovercast@gmail.com or directly on our website at riftovercast.blogspot.com. It's almost time for Extra Life 2012. Extra Life is a fundraising event to raise money for Children's Miracle Network hospitals across the nation. You can sign up at extra-life.org. If you do sign up, be sure to join the Trion Worlds team via the provided drop-down menu. And if you'd like to donate to Rift Overcast's goal, simply click on the ROC Extra Life image below or on our website, where you can also find more information about the event. Don't forget, we're always looking for new guests to come on the show and be a part of Community Voice, so if there's any area of Rift that you have extensive experience in or are especially passionate about, be sure to contact us with your name, a little background about yourself, and your desired topics. Rift Overcast is recorded live every Wednesday at 4 o'clock p.m. Pacific and 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on our Twitch TV channel at twitch.tv/riftovercast. And as always, we want to hear your opinions on both the game and the show, so drop us a line or leave us a comment below, and we will see you next week.